Hi everyone, this is John Frank, editorial director of PL Buyer magazine, welcoming you to the latest PL Buyer podcast. This podcast is one in a series we're doing with Patrick Rodmel, president and CEO of Watt International, a Toronto-based integrated retail agency with more than 40 years of experience in more than 40 countries. Patrick also is a guest columnist with PL Buyer and will be co-chairing our new Best of Design Excellence Awards later this year, recognizing the best in private label package design. Today we're going to be discussing Patrick's 10 Keys to Private Brand Success, the topic of the column he's been writing for us. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be with you, John.
Let's begin by setting the scene for our discussion. We've done this with each of our podcasts, but we always assume there might be some new listeners. So let's briefly talk a bit about the thinking that led you to your 10 Keys. What can our readers and our listeners here learn from them?
Well, John, you know, they say that the only good thing about getting older is that you hopefully learn from your experience. And certainly through the history of our business here in the 17 years I've been with Watt, we've had the pleasure of working with a number of retailers, in fact, close to 100 around the world on their private label programs. So if I said we've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly in terms of the way that people make their decisions in private label and then their execution strategies and things of that nature, it really has been everything from kind of the shoot from the hip approach to what some affectionately call analysis paralysis. So understanding and seeing how organizations have gone about it, we thought it was a good opportunity to share those learnings of all those years and hopefully provide a framework for effective decision making. That's what the 10 Keys is all about.
Okay, great. Well, that's a great information for our readers and our listeners here. We're focusing today on key number 6, innovation. And as the headline on our column in our June issue says, retailers need to commit to innovate in their private label product lines. Why is that? Why do they need to commit to innovation?
Well, John, you know, innovation and presenting new and innovative ideas to your consumer base is really one of the cornerstones of brand loyalty. You know, many of the national brand products you have for sale in your stores, if all it is about a price equation, you know, Tide is Tide no matter where you buy it, is what we like to say. It's no disrespect to the Tide brand, but certainly, you know, consumers know that it's available almost, you know, across almost every retail format in French. So innovation helps to create a point of differentiation for retail, and innovation in private label is really something that can, you know, create what we call stories at home, bring the brand home through innovation is what we like to say. So key to determining point of differentiation for an overall brand.
Yet, innovation traditionally has come from the national brands. Private labels have been more innovation followers. Obviously, it sounds like you think that should change. Are you seeing a change? And again, why should it change?
John, and we think it is, you know, and, you know, there have been some terrific improvements. You know, there's, you know, first of all, I think retailers got better at the fast follower model, which is to say, you know, frankly, seeing innovation happen on the national brand front and then being able to quickly have an alternative, a private label alternative in the marketplace, you know, so that has transitioned into a few examples of some truly innovative things happening in private labels. So we see it happening, albeit fairly slowly, and still we think that one of the challenges with all of this is that, you know, a lot of this innovation is frankly being driven from the supplier side, which I don't mean any disrespect and certainly would encourage that to continue to happen, but we think that the, you know, the dialogue needs to be a two-way street more in terms of driving meaningful innovation for their customers.
And who starts that two-way dialogue? Is it the retailer that should be starting that?
That's what we would suggest, you know. I mean, it all actually starts from the core proposition for the retailer. It's, you know, what are the elements of the brand, the overall brand of the business, that are going to truly drive differentiation? So if you took a retailer that wants to build on attributes such as authenticity, let's say, you know, maybe having innovation happening in more traditional categories for their stores would be a good idea of a place to start. So we think it should start with the retailer's brand, and then it translates to what are the trends happening in the consumer marketplace, then starts the two-way dialogue between supplier, and retailer.
So there's a lot of different directions the retailer has to be looking in, their own brands, what consumers are asking for. And you also mentioned that an innovation isn't just inside the package. It's the package and the outside as well. Expand a bit on that.
Sure, yeah. You know that, you know, if you think back not that long ago, we kind of looked at resealable deli bags as kind of a game changer in retail, when in fact the whole, just the concept of, frankly, being able to air seal a perishable product seems pretty logical when we look back on it. That was a packaging ergonomic change. The actual physical packaging changed to accommodate a consumer need. So trends and innovation isn't necessarily just what's inside the product, inside the package, but it can actually be around the package itself. I loved, frankly, when Target introduced, you know, color-coded rings on the top of their prescription bottles, and frankly, larger type on the prescription itself. Basically, for older eyes, you know, like mine, that need glasses to read labels. So, even little things like type size can be a real consumer-centric innovation, driven for changes in the marketplace.
And wouldn't it be nice if we could see resealable bags in other perishable categories, as you mentioned? Cereal. Cereal comes to mind, for instance.
Well,
we have
I just
seen
don't...
some of it there, but not widespread use of those.
Yeah, exactly, John. You know, I keep looking for the resealable bag in a cereal box. You know, I don't know how many times you sort of open the thing up, and then it's open, and it gets stale quickly, and as you pour it out, it all sort of falls into the box, if you know what I mean. You can always get your last bowl of cereal by taking the inside wrapper out and pouring it out of the cardboard box,
exactly.
If you know what I mean.
Exactly. I do that often.
Yeah, and, you know, I've got kids. I'm sure many of our listeners do, too, and things like, how do you pour milk out of a large bottle? I keep thinking maybe we need a portion control dispenser, you know, for milk, or refillable laundry detergent dispensers and pet food, you know, saving on packaging. So there's all kinds of ergonomic changes and consumer-centric innovations that can happen in the physical packaging. It's not just about what's inside.
Well, how do you get at the key questions? I mean, obviously, innovation can mean a wide range of things. We've just brainstormed a bit here. But as a retailer, of course, you want to innovate in a way that will be profitable and will meet consumer needs. What questions do you ask to get to that point?
Well, I think, John, the first thing to do, and, you know, with any opportunity to take your business in a new direction, is to know where you are. You know, I think we've mentioned on a couple of these calls, you know, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. And the first thing to do is to really understand your starting point. And so, you know, when anyone speaks about innovation, you know, we want to innovate, the first question that we would ask is, well, what's the consumer's perception of you as an innovator today? And if we don't understand our starting point, that is to say, you know, either it's equity scores on innovation of the people who either shop your store and, frankly, those that don't shop. You got to segment it between core shoppers and non-core shoppers, of course. What's your perception of your business? Comparing yourself to the competitive set, too, to say, what's my range of private label products and, you know, my innovation range within relative to my competitive sets. Those would be really the first two questions we'd want to say is, okay, if we see innovation as an opportunity, let's define where we're at today before we define our course for the future.
And you mentioned innovation. You really have the two audiences, don't you? You have your loyal shoppers, and you have the folks that you want to turn into loyal shoppers.
Yeah, you know, there's John. That's again, maybe this is slightly tangential to innovation, but it really gets to the heart of private label as a strategic asset for the business. The way to look at your consumer input is, we call it retention and conversion. Okay, you know, you need to understand what your existing customers think of your business in order to retain them, and you want to understand what your non-customers think of your business in opportunities to convert. So how can you use innovation as a tool to retain your existing customers and convert people that don't currently shop at your store? So that's why we really stress that delineation between, you know, many of the best insights that we find actually come from people that don't shop the store. And, you know, I'm amazed, frankly, at the number of research studies that businesses do just with people that actually shop their store.
Mm-hmm.
You're only getting half the story if you only speak to the people that currently shop your store.
Right, right. And maybe not the half you want to hear or that you need to hear to
Well, that's it. Well, absolutely. You know, conversion of non-customers is, you know, every business has, you know, everyone would like to say, hey, I want my existing customers to spend more and I want new customers to walk through my door. But every business we've looked at has a bigger opportunity in one or the other. That is to say, you're having erosion of your sales with existing, or we're not attracting enough new people to come into the store. So by understanding the data and segmenting that way, you can get a more clear picture of where the true opportunity for the business lies.
Okay. Can you talk about some examples of successful private label innovation and what made them successful? How do you define success for a private label innovation?
Well, you know, it's we talk about innovation in the context of signature items. So if you can actually gain signature item status, you've really created something that's truly innovative. And it's sort of embarrassing to go back as far as this, but you know, Loblaws with their decadent chocolate chip cookie way back, I think it was the early 80s, 1980s in fact, really became a signature item, not just for the private label of President's Choice, but for the overall business of Loblaws. And so, you know, we always, when we talk about innovation and trying to help our clients define innovation profiles, that is to say products that we think can really, you know, gain some traction and gain that kind of equity in innovation, the goal is always to gain signature item status. And PC's Decadent Chocolate Chip Cookie have done that. Something to look at, John, is, you know, today Loblaws, another example, is there, they've introduced 100% natural sparkling fruit juice. And it's actually served in a smaller can. And it's on the trend of healthy alternatives. So they've really, Loblaws in our mind, and you know, we don't work with Loblaws. I'm not just advocating someone who's our client. We certainly admire them as a best in breed retailer. But you know, smaller can, which is a convenience, caters into the convenience elements, and a healthy alternative is right on trend with that. So really great job at having. That's a very recent example of someone that's brought an innovative product to the market that we think will again achieve that kind of signature status.
I was just at an industry event where someone mentioned that cookie and said that every other in North America has been trying to come up with a similar or better product ever since, and they still haven't gotten there. So I think you're right. That does maintain its signature product status.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, and it's still, it's, you know, frankly, in taste tests and many taste tests, still compared to the national brands, it still comes out on top. So after all these years, they've still got the winning formula with that.
And it is taste too. I mean, we've talked about innovation. It's innovation, but it's also quality, because there are many new products out there every year, but they don't have the quality to survive, do they?
You know, John, it's the goal of every private label product should be to try to become a story in the home of the consumer. And particularly in categories and in products that we want to have something new and fresh and frankly innovative, you know, the idea is, can we get our item to be a topic of conversation with the families at their home? So something that is truly unique. Is it a physical packaging innovation? Is it the taste profile of a product? Is it a new ingredient or a healthy alternative story? It can be any one of those ideas. If we can get it to, as we said earlier, signature status and get it to be a product of conversation in the home of our consumers, that should be the goal of every innovation in private label.
That's a very very good point. But are there categories or product lines you could think of now that you feel are ripe for private label innovation?
Well, you know, John, frankly, almost everyone is. You know, you look at something like the national brand innovation of the Swiffer, right? The cleaning category's gone through some pretty profound changes recently. So even things that you would think very mature categories have opportunities for innovation. I think that things like, you know, we're seeing a lot of a huge consumer interest in things like coconut water. So anything that has a sort of a healthy alternative or a health benefit associated with it provides an opportunity. So if I said it's not so much about the category itself, it's about the trend. And if someone were to say to us, you know, what should be the top trends for us to look at, it's healthy and convenience. And frankly, how do those two things apply to any product category in which private label can play a role?
And those don't get old, do they? I mean, people are always looking for healthy alternatives, and they always want convenience.
Absolutely.
Even and in tougher economic times, those still matter.
Well, and case in point, John, in tougher economic times, there's even greater opportunity for private label to capture the noise, you know, as a value alternative to national brands. You know, throw in some innovation there, and you've got a pretty good winning formula for long-term success, especially in tough economic times.
Well, that's great advice for our listeners. Thanks very much. We're about out of time for this podcast, so thanks again, Patrick, for joining us, and thank you to our listeners. We invite them back to all our PL Buyer podcasts with Patrick and other industry leaders. You can hear those by downloading them from our website, privatelabelbuyer.com, and we thank you all very much again, and goodbye, Patrick. Take care.
Thank you.